Welcome to Battle Ready. I'm Ricky Chavez. And on the show today, we talk about principles that prepare people for pressure, adversity, and purpose, not only on the battlefield, but in the business and with family life and everyday things that happen with people today in now's lifestyle. I'm joined by Sheila Warnick, co-author of the CARE, founder and CEO of Share to the Caregiving of Life. Did I say that right, Sheila?
ShareTheCaregiving.org, and it's Share the Care is the book.
Perfect. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm glad you're here. You know, we had a pretty interesting conversation. We have a lot of commonalities, you and I. We were both Army brats. You know, we traveled a lot. We went to a bunch of different schools in different countries. And now, you know, you have decided to pursue a support-given company. Tell us about your company.
Well, it's a nonprofit, and I did not plan this. This is totally because of what happened to me in life, and that was starting with having to help my mother, who was a widow and lived 5.5 hours away from me. My father was deceased, and my brother lived in Japan. He was in the State Department. So everything fell on me at a time in the 80s when there was absolutely nothing to help caregivers. No books, no organizations, no nothing. So it was really challenging. But I did my best. I mean, my mother was a nurse, so I picked up a lot of things from her in terms of taking good care of someone, you know, bringing them food on a nice plate, not a paper plate thrown at them, or, you know, changing the sheets and having clean pajamas to put on after a bath, you know, little things. So anyway, it started out, and for 4 years, I did this running back and forth, and eventually I had to quit my job. So I was making no money. I was working in advertising at the time. I was an art director, and I was also doing some freelance because I wanted to pursue another creative venue, acting, which I had to just stick on the back burner after getting my SAG after card and everything. I couldn't do anything with that because it was, you had to be available. So anyway, I started in, and for 4.5 years, I did everything under the sun. I did a great job taking care of my mother. There was one person I didn't do such a great job with, and that was me. I was living a life, and caregivers can certainly relate to this. Like, I was in a glass bubble where everything was about caregiving. I had no life. I never went out on dates. I never saw my friends. Kind of didn't bother with me because they didn't understand what I was going through. Their parents hadn't reached this stage. So it was very lonely. It was never ending. And by the end of 4 years, I really thought I was going to have a breakdown because my mother had reached the stage where she needed 24/7 care, and I had to resort to a nursing home for her, which broke my heart. But I needed to be able to work again. I couldn't take care of her the way she needed to be cared for. So after looking at 8 of them, I finally found one that I thought was pretty good. And that's where she ended up for the next 7 years. So over the next 7 years, I was still running back and forth every week to make sure everything was okay, checking up on her, visiting her, because she would light up like a Christmas tree when I came in the room. She was so happy to see me. Anyway, at the very same time all this is going on over this 4-year period, one of my friends named Susan was divorced. She had 2 young teens, and she found a lump behind her ear. And I said, you should go get it checked out. And she did. Her doctor sent her to the hospital immediately because it turned out to be cancer of the parotid gland, which is like your salivary gland. And she was given a prognosis of 8 years. And she went back to work. But over the 4 years, she kept having more and more issues. It moved to her shoulder and her arm. She had bone cancer by then. Her friends knew about the first bout with this cancer going into the hospital, but they didn't know it kept coming back. So then suddenly, just as I'm putting my mother in the nursing home, Susan has a crisis. She's about to have another test to see if the cancer has gone to her spine. And she was absolutely terrified. It was actually her therapist, Dr. Suki Miller, who got through to her and said, call your friends together and have them come to my office tomorrow night. We'll figure out how we can help you. And the next night, 12 women who didn't know each other, I knew two of the women in the room, showed up on less than 24 hours notice, which I think is pretty amazing. And we held this amazing meeting. And the first thing Dr. Miller asked Susan to do was, please tell your friends what's really going on with you. Because they were nervous, they were frightened, they were skeptical. What are we going to do? How is this going to work? The room was just breaking apart with all kinds of emotions. So she told her friends about all the surgeries, all the radiation treatments, how it had impacted her life with her kids and with her job. And now she was going to be facing the fact that it could have gone to her spine. And she was terrified. And then she cried. Then we cried. Then we got to work. And that night, we actually came up with the key system that Share the Care uses to spread the workload around so that it's shared equally by everyone. And that's what I want to tell you about, if there's still time in this segment to go on, or I'll save it for the next part. But what we came up with was amazing.
Well, and that's beautiful. I know how hard it is. I remember my mom living in El Paso, and I'm living in Houston, and she has COPD. And just the whole thought process and everything that went about me, you know, bringing her to Houston, having her live with us, you know, having to care for her. So I understand that all that get together and just the pressures of making those kind of decisions. Let's talk about that for a second. And in the next segment, we'll talk more about the actual process of what you do to as a solution. But, you know, our viewers out there, there's a lot of them that are coming into the age where they need to start taking care and helping their parents. And even some of them having special needs kids, or the family that's close to them, their brother and sister have special needs kids. How is that thought process? Let's talk a little bit about what are people going through when they have to, when they're making this decision to be a caregiver.
Well, people have reached the end of their rope. Usually, it's like they're burning out quickly. In fact, you know, caregivers are really at risk for dying before the person they're taking care of, and that's happened because it's such an intense job, and nobody should do it alone. And that's what this model is about. This model is not about taking care of someone with cancer or taking care of someone with ALS or anything else. It's about creating a family of friends and neighbors and coworkers who are going to pitch in and help with the jobs that are coming up, that they need to unload from the caregiver so the caregiver can do their job better and have better quality time with their loved one that they're taking care of. And people want to help. They just don't know what to do. And this model walks them through it. In fact, a Share the Care group is not started by the caregiver nor the person needing the care, but rather two friends that really want to help. And in fact, the first 9 chapters of Share the Care are written to them, so they can go and work with the family, work with the patient, find out what kind of help do they need, find out who they could invite, and stretch the mind of the caregiver to let people in who they think, oh, they're not going to want to do it. How do you know? You got to give them the opportunity to say yes or no. And then these two people will prepare for the first meeting, which is scripted, and they will lead the meeting themselves.
So Share the Care is about developing a support network, I'm taking, right? A support network,
yes,
that can help everybody get together. So, you know, after the commercial break, we're going to come back and talk more about how this Share the Care program works. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Battle Ready. Stay connected to this show and any other show on Now Media TV favorites, live or on demand, anytime you like. You can download the Now Media app on TV on Roku and iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. If you're on the move, you can easily download the podcast version on www.nowmedia.tv. From business to news, lifestyle, culture, and everything else that you're looking for, we're here 24/7 just to be able to bring you what we have. Now, welcome back. We're back with Sheila Warnick, and we shared a lot in the of her personal experiences in the last segment. Sheila, welcome back.
Thank you.
So
happy to be here.
Sheila, I really appreciate your story, because I definitely understand it. You know, having had my mom live with me and having to provide care for it, and just being so lost. I wish I would have had somebody like you to coach me through it. So Sheila, you went through this, you were trying to figure it out, you left your job for a while, and you just 24/7, and you finally realized that there must be another way. And that's when you came up with Share the Care, correct?
Well, that's what we did for a mutual friend who happened to be ill during the same period. like I mentioned, we had this meeting. We were strangers to one another.
Sure.
But what brought us together was the fact that Dr. Miller asked our friend Susan to really tell them what's going on, because you have to ground your team in reality, not in fantasy or guessing or, you know, rumors. So that was the first thing. Then she cried, we cried, and then we came up with the key system for Share the Care. How were we going to share the care with 12 of us who didn't know each other? So we decided to work in teams of two. And we would call those two people the captains of the week. And their job was to go to Susan to find out what she needed for the coming week, whether it's going to the hospital, the doctor, needing food, needing whatever, anything. And then we would call everybody else, because there was no internet. We didn't have iPhones. We had nothing. We had the telephone. That was it. We would call the rest of our group, get the jobs filled, and give Susan a schedule of who was coming when to do what for how long. And it was important to have two people as captains of the week, because if something came up in the life of one of them, there was always another one to keep the ball rolling. because the following week a fresh team would rotate in with a fresh set of captains. And then we started in the next day. And I want to mention one of the other things that working this way did, it took away the need for Susan to ever have to ask for help, except in an emergency, because we always went to her. And we started in the next day, and for the next 3.5 years, we did everything you can imagine to care for our friend, help her daughters, and, you know, just keep her focused. And she was in so much pain because of her bone cancer, so it was very difficult. She was on a lot of morphine, so her personality was changing a lot, and we had to deal with that. But we did. In fact, the greatest thing that we did, besides all the usual stuff, was about 3 months before Susan died, we organized her youngest daughter's wedding under her direction, as if Susan were doing this herself. It was at Tavern on the Green in New York City. We got the band, we got the food, we got the this, we got the that. The whole thing was done, and it was beautiful. It was held in May, and Susan saved up all of her energy to be present at this wedding and walk down the aisle with her daughter and her ex-husband. And I'll never forget the bride thanking her parents for this beautiful wedding and then thanking all her other moms for making it happen, because we were family by then. And a lot of the people who had never been involved with caregiving in our group learned very well how to work and share the load with a bunch of people. It worked so well that we got a call. I was working with my friend Cappy Capistella. We were both in advertising and we were working together, and we got a call from another woman who was in a similar circumstance, and she was about to have a bone marrow transplant. She had a young daughter and an elderly mother, and they were not going to be able to take care of her. But she had heard about Susan's funny family, as we were called, from Susan at groups at Cancer Care. And so she said, I know they're not going to be able to take care of me, but I have 20 friends that want to help. Could I have a funny family? So I remember looking at Cappy and like, okay. So we organized our team to meet with her team of people. And they came in just like we had come in the first night, with all kinds of emotions. And this time there were men in the group. So what we had planned was to explain to them how we worked and our forms and systems and all that sort of thing. And then we also talked about what we had gained personally from helping Susan. And some of the responses were amazing. I remember Dr. Miller asking us this question in the first meeting, and I didn't know what to say. I said, I came here to help my friend, not to get something. But she made me say something. I don't remember what it was, but what I got was I finally learned how to be a good caregiver, because I was not doing everything on my own. I was sharing the load. I was letting others in, much like a family member might, because I was so close to Susan, that I could see how she enjoyed being with other people and how they were able to give things to her. Another woman shared she always wanted to have children but couldn't. And so she had all of this nurturing inside of her with no place to go until she was part of the group and could help Susan.
That's amazing. So what does a successful caregiving group need in order to stay like organized and compassionate and, you know, sustainable over time? What does it take?
Because this meeting bonds people together and shows them how to work together and to incorporate people occasionally who can't help full time, but but want to be a free floater, as we call them, who can jump in at the last minute notice. It's making people work together, because some jobs require two or three people at the same time. So you know you can't do it by yourself, and you know you have a bunch of other people to call on if you need help. But it's structured in such a way that we encourage the people in the group to get to know each other well, have coffee together, you know, because nobody else understands what they're going through except each other. So there's the common bond.
So in your book, Share the Care, you create a kind of a roadmap to prepare people for this kind of an opportunity. Is that correct?
Yes, and it's a roadmap to sustain the group, because it's filled with all kinds of suggestions and how to do things like that we've built over time, like with Cappy's group, which I'll tell you very briefly. About 7 years after we had formed this group for Susan, Cappy and her father were both diagnosed with glioblastoma, grade 4 brain tumors. Now, Cappy was my best friend and someone I worked with in advertising. She was my creative partner. So I started a group for her, and she had brain surgery, which left her unable to speak, write, move, do anything. And both she and her father passed away within 12 hours of each other 10 months later. That was what made me update Share the Care for a second edition in 2004 and start a nonprofit to get the word about this model out to the world, because we were getting so much beautiful feedback from people using it. And it had spread all over the country, and it was even in other countries. So word of mouth, or someone reading a story about it and being inspired, or knowing someone they knew who needed this kind of help. That happened with, there was a full page story about Share the Care and our work in the Washington Post that inspired a woman to start a group out of a jazzercise class to help a woman who had a little daughter and a husband, and she was terminally ill. And they had a huge amount of medical expenses. So this group raised money to help pay off those expenses. And when she passed away, they didn't just stop. They kept going for the rest of the year to care for the daughter and her husband and keep the support and love going with them.
Sheila, we only have a few seconds left before the segment ends. Can you tell somebody how they can reach out to you or get in touch with you to continue a conversation about Share the Care?
Well, they can send me an email. That's probably the best way. We also have a telephone number, which is on our website. But my email is swarnock, SWARNOCK, at sharethecare.org. And we have a website which is filled with stories and videos and ways to purchase the book. You can get it on Amazon. You can buy a secondhand one, you know, the second edition. I'm currently working on a third edition.
Amazing.
Because this work has to continue.
100%. We'll be right back in the next segment, and we'll talk a little bit more about Share the Care and how Sheila's making an impact. Welcome back to Battle Ready. You know, over the last couple of segments, I had an amazing opportunity to talk to Ms. Sheila Work about the process they had with Share the Care. And it's just amazing. So now what we're going to talk about a little bit more is, you know, the meetings, the groups, the individuals that came in that didn't know each other, the different personalities, what Sheila learned from the first group that she had when she supported Susan, now the second group that reached out to her. Sheila, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Sheila, man, that story, I can't even imagine. So You're helping Susan. Susan is just talking about you guys at her cancer treatment. Now people are starting to learn about this network, the Share the Care that you guys have developed. And I know you've had a lot of hits and misses, goods that happen, maybe some struggles. And now you're meeting with a whole new group. How does that start out? What are the first steps?
Well, first of all, Cappy and I were leading the meeting, and quite frankly, we were terrified, you know. But sure. We got into it right away because we recognized ourselves in them as they came in the room with the same feelings and skepticism and fear that we had experienced. But when we started talking about how we worked, how we shared workloads, how we supported each other, how we really became connected like a real family. And even though our friend Susan had died, we were still connected. We're still connected today. But one of the first things that we noticed was as we explained the systems and how we worked, we could see it in their faces. We could see these people transforming. They didn't say anything, but they were thinking like, oh, that's what they did. Oh, we can do that. That makes a lot of sense. This is great. Yeah. And they were getting all excited because they had a plan. They had steps about how to begin. And they were so excited to get going and have their own meeting. And the room was filled with so much love. The next morning, I called up Cappy. I said, Cappy, we got to put this down on paper so other people don't have to reinvent the wheel. Did you see what happened last night? It was so exciting. And so we did. We sat down and we wrote the first edition of Share the Care that was published in 1995. So it's like at its 30-year anniversary already. But
amazing.
We wrote it so that people could follow it. And as I mentioned before about the article in the Washington Post, after we learned about this group starting for this woman who had read about it, we got another email about another group that had started because they read the article. So it's hearing, seeing, and being inspired by what a group can do. Groups all start with the same meeting, but groups are unique because the people are different, the culture is different, the challenge of the patient is different, the number of people, you know, it's all different, but each one is unique because they can follow the roadmap and create their own little funny family, as we first
That's
were called,
amazing.
Or Share the Care group. Or, I mean, they have wonderful names like Harriet's Harem or Joe's, you know, Eagles or something. You know, like there have been groups of men who would go to a buddy with ALS who couldn't move and his wife couldn't pick him up. So they would go in at night, get him up, get him showered, get him in his pajamas, get him into bed and leave. And another team would come in the morning to get him up and get him dressed in the wheelchair for the day. You know, it's like using the talent within the group because these men were strong. They could do it. It was their buddy. So they wanted to do it. They were honored to do it.
So let me ask you, Sheila. So,
yes.
And I apologize for interrupting you, but we talked about this in the break, right? So you're telling me about all the great activities, and those are such amazing things. But I think some of the things that the viewers are looking at is, all right, what about the family of the person that needs the caregiving? What kind of meetings do you have with them? How do they decide to be part of this or, you know, come on this journey? Is there anything you do with them first?
Absolutely. That's the beginning of the book, and that's written to these two people. They're either two friends or two very close people to the family or whatever, but they're the people that are going to run the meeting. The thing we suggest to friends, just because maybe a family member might be too emotional to lead the meeting. I mean, it's, you know, you got to figure that out. But their job, the two people, is to go to the family and to say, we have a way of helping that's going to allow you, the family, to have more quality time with your loved one because you're not doing everything and you're getting help. And maybe you have kids and the kids can, you know, be entertained by another family and their kids, or, you know, taking the load off of the family. But doing it in a very thoughtful way. It's not, we're not coming in to take over. My God, no, that's not it at all. It's, we're here to support you if you will allow us, because this is a very important thing. The caregiver and the care recipient need to allow, and the family need to allow people in. Otherwise, they're going to burn out without any help. And sometimes it's maybe a family member, the caregiver, who wants the help, but the patient says, no, I don't want anybody in here at all in my home, blah, 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 blah. Then it's up to the caregiver to say to the patient, you know, I love you, but you may not want anybody to come in and help, but I need the help.
No, I think that's a big point. I remember having the conversations with my mom when we had people coming into my house and to watch them while I was at work or whatever. And she would be like, Ricky, they're not doing anything or this or that. And I'm like, Mom, they just need to be there just in case. But I think there's the thing we talked about in the break was that the meetings that you have with the family up front, it kind of sets some guidelines, what they want them to do, what they don't want them to do. There's a questionnaire that you said they fill out. Is that correct?
Well, there's a questionnaire that these two people will prepare to have at the meeting so that everyone at the meeting fills it out with their contact information, their availability. Also, we list all of the jobs that the family has indicated are needed right away, whatever they are, whether it's help with cleaning the house or taking the kids to school or cooking dinners, or it could be anything. And it's given to each member of the meeting, and they can rate themselves with, it's right here. They can rate themselves on, because we have a million forms here. We have the individual data form is what they're filling out. And they get to say whatever it is, I'm terrific, I'm good, I'm fair, don't call me. In
so
the
how
early
do you find
stages
out what...
of a group, people don't know each other. So this is kind of a guide for some of the captains.
Sure. But so how do you find out what the family wants done, or what what caregiving they're going to need?
That's what the two people do before they lead the meeting. They meet with the family or they meet with the patient. They say, we're going to have this meeting. What do you need? What are the jobs, or what are you challenged by? You need a ramp up to the house, or do you need a wheelchair? What do you need? Or do you need someone to sit with the kids? I mean, it could be anything.
Sure. And then they take that to the meeting, right?
That's filled out on a form that's taken to the meeting for people to fill out while they're at the meeting, along with their contact information. And they can write in other things like, I'm truly great at, you know, and like, let us know, I've been a caregiver before. Or I'm a physical therapist. I could help with the with the PT exercises, or, you know, things you don't think to ask, but people can offer that they're good at. Or I have experience, you know, I worked with a EMF team for like 6 months. So You know, I kind of get that. And also
And what's the group?
the other important thing that every group should have at the beginning, and that's done by these two people or the group, by talking to the
So then they
family.
take the
What?
information on that sheet and then they put them in a schedule. Is that how that works?
No, they're given to the captain. So the captains, in the beginning, they don't know who to call first. Rather than calling 20 people, you can look at this and say, oh, here's somebody who's really likes to do laundry. Let's call them to do the laundry every week or something. It's just logical, but in the beginning, because you don't know them that well yet, you're only about to have a meeting, so nobody knows one another yet, but they're going to bond together because they have a single purpose now, a mission to do something that they're capable of doing, which will only take up probably 2 or 3 hours a week. You know, when you think about it, if someone's giving you 2 or 3 hours a week and you have 10 people, that's a lot of time off the caregiver with picking
Sure.
up things or going shopping or cleaning or, you know, mowing the lawn or whatever it is.
Okay, Sheila,
This
we're
is.
getting ready to go on a break. We're a little bit ahead of time, but we'll be right back and after this commercial, we'll talk a little bit more about the whole process with Sheila. Welcome back to Battle Ready.
Unless we do
Stay
that, unless we do
connected to
that.
this show and every other Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. You can download the Now Media app, TV on the TV or the Roku or iOS, or you can do anything in online programming in both in English and Spanish. And if you're on the move, you can catch the podcast version of at www.nowmedia from business and news and outlets and everything, culture, leadership, and wellness and beyond. Now Media TV is around 24 hours here for you. To see the amazing hosts and guests we have for you. Welcome back. In the last segment, we're talking with Sheila Warrick. Hey, Sheila. All right, so we talked a whole lot. We talked about why and how you came about doing this. We talked about, how you built this network as you supported Susan and how that snowballed into Share the Care. And the last thing we talked about. The captains and building the teams. And now we're going to talk about some of the principles. You have seven principles that you have in your book.
Yes.
So we'll talk a little
Yes,
bit
we
about
do.
that.
Okay, they're very logical. Everything about Share the Care is really logical. Number one, sharing responsibility is key to not burning out. Caregivers burn out, so you gotta have help. Know your limits and stick to them. If they say, can you do this job where you're going to have to go to the hospital with the patient and da da da, and you are terrified of hospitals, you get to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that, but I'd rather do this. So, you know, being able to say no.
Sure.
And
I
it
mean, that's a
won't
hard one, I'm
work.
sure.
Pardon?
I said that's a hard one, I'm sure, saying no.
Yeah, but it, you know, if we can believe your no, we'll believe your yes. You
Okay.
know, some people say yes to everything, but they fall through. But also the team keeps people on track here with these. The one that I mentioned in the second meeting, it won't work unless everyone gains something personally from the experience of helping the person you're caring for. Also, another important one is there's no one right way to do this. If you have 10 people in the group and you say, well, how are we going to do this? You're going to get 10 different ideas. The group's going to have to agree on starting with one of them. And if it doesn't work, you've got nine more to follow. So that's another biggie. Anyone who wants to help should be encouraged, even if they don't know the patient that well. Wanting to help is is really a light inside of each of us. It's the thing that makes us all unique and great. So you don't want to say, no, we don't want you. We give somebody a job. They can wash the dishes. They can mow the lawn. They could take the dog for a walk. Find something for them to do. And if the patient really doesn't enjoy being in their company, you know, don't give them anything that's involved with the patient. Trust the group and support each other. That's how these groups carry on. In fact, I came across a group that had been going for over 21 years. So it's about group being together. And last of all, very important, keep your own life in good working order. If you have a big job, if you have a big family, you got a lot of responsibilities, you got to keep your own life going well as helping out. You can't burn out trying to do too much. So keep your own life and yourself healthy so you can keep doing the work. That goes for the main caregiver too. You got to keep yourself healthy. Because if you get sick, then what?
Sheila, and so you when you're talking to the people in the group, what kind of commitment is that to them? I mean, are we talking about a weekly commitment, a daily commitment, a monthly commitment? How do y'all figure out the commitment?
Well, I think a group coming together to help somebody is there to help them weekly. So it's a weekly commitment, because being a captain is a weekly commitment. But if you have, like, we had 12 people, so that meant we had 12 people. We had 6 captains teams. So that meant that you were captains once every 6 weeks. And then you did your other job as well. Sometimes the job is like just going over to your friend's house and making dinner and watching something on TV together. It's about being with them so they're not isolated and forgotten.
So
and allowing time for a family member to go to a doctor's appointment themselves or get their hair done or something, you know, something they need.
What do you coach the team on when they're like feeling stressed and maybe they're scared to share it or they don't want to share it? Is there something you do within your book to coach them through? Hey, if you're having something going on, let people know. Is that what y'all do?
Oh yeah. Well, that's part of it for sure. In fact, I talk about that with corporate caregivers. If you have a job and you're a caregiver, you better tell people that you're a caregiver so they don't think you spent the night, you know, running around and, you know, drinking and dancing or something. You're exhausted from being in the emergency room with someone, you know. You can lean on your fellow team members. This is a family. You're supposed to lean on your team members. In fact, even after the group is over, we've been known to call each other to help in an emergency for our own sake, because we become like a crack emergency team. You need help, so, you know, 5 people show up.
So when, is there any kind, so the people that are volunteering to be these caregivers will share the care. Are there any kind of certifications they need, or are there any recommendations you have, maybe CPR or anything like that?
Well, the more, you know, experience people have, the better, but it's not a requirement, because if you get a group of people, you're going to get people who have been caregivers, who have been through a situation, or, you know, understand how the emergency room works and, you know, that sort of thing. That hasn't really been an issue. There are people who have been in Share the Care groups, for example, taking care of someone with ALS, and they worked this way. They worked with people coming in, like 3 people would come in at 3 different times during the day. And one of the people who came in was trained in ALS protocols, by a nurse so that in an emergency they could do something and then they could call the nurse to come in. But they volunteered to be trained. They aren't, no, we don't say you have to be trained in something, but they volunteered. We had another woman who didn't want to come to visit Cappy because she was afraid she was going to have a, you know, like an episode with her brain tumor. So she came to, wouldn't you know, she came to visit one day and Cappy did have such a, such an episode. So I got a call. I said, call the EMS. And I said, I'm coming right over. And the other people who were due that day were on their way over as well. So it wasn't a big deal. But it was important that she told us that she was terrified of being alone with Cappy if she was going to have an episode with a brain tumor, you know, where she would have.
That must be scary.
Of course, it is scary. But again, I did things in these groups that I never did in my life. The same thing with my mother. That's how you grow. That's how you learn. But if your patient has a specific disease, especially like Alzheimer's, and we tell this to people. In fact, I'm adding information in the third edition about Alzheimer's and dementia. You must get some kind of training from a place like the Alzheimer's Association or some place where they have someone who can teach the people in the group what to do and what not to do when they start wandering, how to entice them gently with, you know, let's go have some cookies or, you know, everything for someone who has a dementia or Alzheimer's situation needs to be structured. There can't be 10 people coming in and out of the house. You should only have maybe 4 people who come to the house separately to do things so that they're not disturbing the everyday
routine
structure of that person's life. I mean, there's
million
things you learn.
I look forward to seeing your next version. I know that if somebody wants to get a hold of you or reach out to you, it's sharethecare.org, correct?
Yes, Sheila S. Warnock at sharethecare.org, but sharethecare, www.sharethecare.org is our website. And you can send me an email. The beginning of the book is written to the two people who will organize the group, work with the family, figure out what's needed. And the rest of it is about how you work together and jobs and how you split them up and suggestions and do's and don'ts, things like that. And people do this out of their heart. And the patient and the family caregiver, you know, if someone comes over and they're vacuuming your living room and they're doing it not like you would do it, you don't want to start yelling at them or say, oh, that's wrong. You know, you're doing it all wrong.
Sure.
Yeah. Say, could you please just do this like this, or let them do whatever they're doing and then fix it later, because you don't want to destroy that need or want to help.
Okay.
It can be tough,
well, Sheila,
you know, it's not easy. It's not easy to give up control, really.
I bet.
But a group is not to control the family. A group is to be a family for you, an extension
of your family.
Well, Sheila,
we have run out of time. I am so sorry. I really wanted to thank you for joining us today on Battle Ready. Your work reminds me of just how great it is to be battle ready and be prepared to, you know, really look at every situation with caregiving. And your website is amazing. I'm looking forward to seeing the third edition of your book when you address dementia and Alzheimer's. But once again, anytime you get a chance, think about how you're going to be battle ready when your situation comes or somebody that you know, and please share Sheila's Share the Care. We'll talk to you soon on Battle Ready.